people of faith, may we always, and goodwill, let us always walk with peace and nonviolence, but we know the truth is power than wrong. And that is why we are all here today. So let us continue this process now until he gets his freedom.
That's Pastor Mark Knutson of the Augustana Lutheran Church, where Francisco is in sanctuary.
Thank you very much, Reverend Mark. We have Francisco on the phone, on the speakerphone. We're going to try to have him speak and see if that works. But we have him from the Augustana Lutheran Church.
Francisco, escuchas? A ver, dinos algo.
I would like to thank you, all of you, for being there in my support. I've been here because of heaven and I've been cancer. But let's not take it as a bad news. Let's not take it as another tool of this unjust system that is against our freedom or immigrants' people freedom. But we have to be strong and keep fighting. We need to show these people that we are all together on this. And won't give up and give up, we have a good result. I love every one of you.
That was Francisco Aguirre speaking to the crowd from. Francisco speaking to the crowd by a speakerphone from the basement of Augustana Lutheran Church.
So my name is Tania Anzueta. I work with the National Day Labor Organizing Network. And I wanted to say that Francisco has been an incredibly important part of the fight, not just here, but around the country. The reason why there are 70 day labor centers across the country is because of the work of Francisco. He was part of the first group of day laborers to fight nationally for the right of people to look for work on corners without being harassed and arrested and criminalized by the police. And so today we are here because now he needs our help. It's really sad that besides being an example of someone who has fought his whole life for immigrant rights, now he's an example of what's wrong with the immigration system. We have a case where Francisco was sought by ICE at his home. And this is something that is actually happening across the country, where ICE is going to people's homes to look for them, regardless of how close they are with the community. So we are here today to make sure that the USCIS office knows that there is a support for Francisco from the community, that there needs to be a rescheduling of his appointments, and that there needs to be no intervention between Immigration and Customs Enforcement and USCIS through his process. Keep ICE out of USCIS, let him schedule his appointment, and let him continue the process for his U visa. Thank you.
From the National Day Laborers Center. And that was excerpts from a rally in front of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service office in support of Francisco Aguirre, a day laborer organizer in Sanctuary. That wraps it up for tonight's Labor Radio show. This Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock, the only program of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington, of the working class, for the working class, by the working class. A couple of important labor events happening tomorrow, Tuesday, October 28th, at 4:30 in front of the Multnomah County building at 501 Southeast Hawthorne. Members of AFSCME Local 88, that's the County Workers Union, are demanding $15 minimum and a fair contract. And then at 6 o'clock, the general meeting of the 15 now PDX organization at the SEIU Local 503 Union Hall, which is at 64th and Southeast Foster. Thank you to our engineer, Danielle Parks, and stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Welcome to this podcast for the Rhythm Jam, where I'll be in conversation with sought-after trombonist and bandleader Emily Asher. Emily is currently touring the West Coast with two bands, Emily Asher's Garden Party and Endangered Species, and she'll be in Portland for several days over the next 2 weeks. Tune in for full details of venues, dates, exclusive news, and more on this amazing young group of jazz musicians keeping this important music alive. To listen to the Rhythm Jam podcast, go to kboo.fm and search for Rhythm Jam under the Programs tab.
The time is 6:35. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on KBOO, it's Prison Pipeline.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland. I'm Karen James. In May 2014, the fifth annual Law and Disorder Conference was held at Portland State University. The sponsors of the event were Students for Unity and the Jericho Movement. Tonight we'll hear a presentation from this event called Supporting Prisoner Strikes from Palestine to Pelican Bay. This workshop was facilitated by Ed Mead of Prison Art and Bo Brown from the Prison Activist Resource Center, a prison abolitionist group based in Oakland, California. This event was recorded by Paul Rowland.
In 2011, in July of 2011, there was a hunger strike initiated by these people, the gang leaders of all the races who are in the security housing unit. And according to the Department of Corrections in California, their report on the numbers of participants, in that first hunger strike, there were 6,600 participants. The administration made some promises, and the prisoners backed off the hunger strike. They had to re-implement that hunger strike in October of that year. That hunger strike peaked at just under 12,000 prisoners participating. Again, the Department of Corrections made promises, and once again, those promises weren't kept. In August of 2012, the prisoners issued an agreement to end hostilities. And that was through our publications and through other means that got into prisons throughout the state. And as a result of that, the gang violence within the California prison system has all but ceased. This was a huge wake-up call for the Department of Corrections to see this happening. The third hunger strike was initiated on July 11th of 2013. Huge outside support for each of these hunger strikes. In Seattle, we organized a group called Free Us All. We did musical events. We did a major demonstration. We printed out 10,000 full-color broadsheets and sent them to cities around the United States. We did quite a bit. In that hunger strike, according to the Department of Corrections statistics, 30,000 prisoners kicked it off. 2,600 prisoners refused to work. Those numbers, of course, dwindled with time. That hunger strike lasted for just under 60 days. And the five demands that kicked this whole thing off, very reasonable demands, were not met. And so right now, they are contemplating their next step. I don't know what that step is, but I think they're leaning in the direction of statewide work stoppage. The prisons, of course, cannot run without the labor of prisoners. Prisoners mop the floors, do the laundry, cook the food, everything non-custodial, in the non-custodial context at the prison. And so the prison can handle a work strike that lasts, 2 weeks or something like that, but a protracted work strike will bring the prison to their knees. And such a move is the only way that prisoners will have in order to enforce any demands that they might win. Now, it was against the law back in the day for workers to organize. They called it something like criminal syndicalism. And the workers went ahead. And as a result of that, we have weekends, the 8-hour day, and a whole lot of other benefits. The unions, of course, have since jumped into bed with management, but in their day, they accomplished a lot of positive stuff. So the point being, if I don't know how many of you here consider yourselves a revolutionary, I consider myself a revolutionary, I'm not a liberal. And if you're a revolutionary, you understand that there can be no revolution in the absence of a point of conflict. In the absence of that point of conflict, there exists a state of class peace, which is not a good thing. The prisoners in California represent that point of conflict, and everything that can be done to support them. I mean, I don't know how many of you have heard of the racist Aryan Brotherhood gang. One of the Aryan Brotherhood representatives are talking class politics, are saying, put that other crap aside. It's all about the struggle. And they're united with the other races in a way that is, well, not miraculous, but unusual. The Department of Corrections is at a loss of how to deal with this. What they're doing right now is they've tried to amend the prison regulations on obscenity to include publications, such as the publications that Mark and I put out, that are against authority and society, they say. They call us deviant publications because we don't go along with what they say. Of course, the Department of Corrections in California has access to all the media that they want, and their side of the story gets told all the time. They call our little tiny publication propaganda. Well, propaganda is something that tells one side of the story. We tell the prisoner's side. There's a law in California that prevents the news media from getting in to interview prisoners. Assemblyman Tom Amiano, however you say that, tried to get in and see prisoners at Pelican Bay and was prevented from doing so. And this is the one place, the prison is the one place that society has where it does the worst to citizens that are confined there, and it should be the one place where the light of day shines in very brightly so that everybody will have an idea of what's going on. But the Department of Corrections suppresses that. The recidivism rate in the state of California, according to former Governor Schwarzenegger's website, is 70%. If you had a factory that produced a product with a 70% defect rate, you'd go out of business really fast. That's according to former Governor Schwarzenegger's website. The Department of Corrections, of course, is going to give a figure that's much lower. They claim that it's about 46%. But generally, it's around 67% for Oregon, Washington. Most states is around 67%. One of the reasons for that, of course, is that there's no help for people who get out. $40 and a bus ticket, and that's not even enough to buy a gun. So
I want to interrupt just at this point, just to give them an idea of how this was done. We're talking about four prisoners in solitary confinement. These are over the short quarter. Maybe there's more than four down there, but there's probably four who lead this thing. Okay, there's 120,000 California prisoners. How can it get this message out to everybody? I don't know how many prisons they have, but they have to get them out to every prison, this message out to every prison. Not only the hunger strike, but the grievances, they have to put it all together. And they've done this through a newsletter, by writing letters, luckily, to Ed, who said, okay, I'll do a newsletter for you. And they gave him the money to do this newsletter. When it goes back in, it goes into all the prisons. What the leadership is saying is read by all the other prisoners. And the prisoners, those prisoners can write letters and show what their response to it is. And a lot of them are saying, yeah, right on. And when they say, we got to pay for this newsletter to keep it going, they say, we'll do it. Their family and their friends, they send the money. The prisoners, They have very little inside, but they send us stamps. They'll go and hustle stamps through the whole prison block and send it to us in lumps. 60 stamps at a time, maybe. I don't know what's the biggest amount you ever got.
72.
Yeah.
But these are people in the SHU, in very small pods. And so that is quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. And that's the momentum, keeps the momentum of this thing going. They're very faithful, especially the guys in the SHU are very faithful in sending stamps and money, the people sending stamps and money to keep this thing moving. We have to supplement, and we do, and we are lucky. I really appreciate, I don't know some of you here, but a lot of you gave us a lot of stamps and money to complete this latest event mailing. And those guys are going to hear about it. They slacked up on the job, and we had to go out here and mail on the streets. I was make it sound real bad. You know, but what they're doing is phenomenal. It's not something we haven't done on the street. We haven't called a cessation of hostility between, you know, groups out here. In fact, I was here at one of the organizations where there's definitely a little hostility going on there. You know? And that was unnecessary, totally unnecessary. I know there are young people and they're not familiar with self-criticism and blah, 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 but that could have been resolved in another way. It takes a little time, but it can be resolved. But anyways, I want to get away from that and get back to what is going on in prison. It's that newsletter that is keeping this thing together. I'm wondering, if we cut it off, if we stop doing that newsletter, how would they communicate from prison to prison? They'd have to wait till one bus moved from one prison to another. I have to get back to Ed. You get it, please.
Yeah, I was saying, you know, I was part of the behind-the-scenes support group before the first wave of strikes, and it was nice. It was groups from different, people from different groups all around the country, even into Canada and in Europe. And we were pulling our resources and you know, getting all our connections prepared for this, you know. And so that I think that really helped. It really kicked off with their feet running and on the strike.
They, the short quarter prisoners, announced the strike in December of 2010, saying that the strike would take off on the 1st of July in 2011. And I thought, this is the first strike, and I thought, okay, yeah, I've been in a hunger strike or two myself. And I thought, yeah, okay, there's going to be half a dozen of them, and they're going to not eat for 3 or 4 days. But I flew to San Francisco from Seattle and helped to organize the outside support in the Bay Area, and was just totally blown away by the number of prisoners that were involved and the length of time that they lasted. Now, California has a policy on hunger strikes, and that policy is that after you've missed 9 meals, then you are considered on hunger strike, and what they do is they go into your cell and search it and take anything edible out. And so these guys are not sitting in their cell, oh, we're on hunger strike, munch, 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 munch. You know, it's the real deal, and they're really committed. And like I say, these are representatives of the Northerners and the Southerners, the Aryan Brotherhood types, the Black Guerrilla family, all come together around this. And they've just done a remarkable job of providing leadership to prisoners. And
it's a really sophisticated leadership because they pick 4 issues that they're using as complaints.
Well, all of the demands are very reasonable, but there's a larger issue at play here. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery for everyone except those convicted of a crime. That means we have 2.3 million slaves in the United States, and 14.7 million who are under some sort of supervision, judicial, parole, probation, that sort of thing. And then millions more in, like, condition of Mark and I, who are victimized by the new Jim Crow, and plus all of our family members. There's the potential here for a movement of people who are held in a state of dependency and irresponsibility in conditions that would be illegal to hold a primate in. And so everything is there to bring this about, except the mainline prisoners. They don't have a sense of their power. They don't have a sense of the righteousness of their cause, and therefore they lack the unity. Some of those prisoners still see other prisoners as the enemy rather than the people who are holding them against their will at gunpoint. And so how this plays out remains to be seen. We don't have any answers, but So far, the leadership inside has done an amazing job, and we see our role out here as one of amplifying the voice of prisoners. That is our mission, and we do that through events, through demonstrations, through publications, and any other way we can. And the support for these California prisoners has been widespread on the outside, and also prisoners in other states are starting to implement similar tactics. The hunger strike is a very difficult, should be a last gasp tactic, whereas the work strike is the one that, you know, gives the power.
Working is great to be able to do a work strike, but these guys aren't working.
That's the people in the hole aren't working. They can do is a hunger strike.
Okay, and if you are familiar with Gitmo, those people went on hunger strike, okay, because they have no other way to express their complaint against a violation of human rights. In Palestine, Ed and I were fortunate enough to sit on a panel in Evergreen State College, and there was a guy from Palestine who was spent time in their control units or shoes, and he was tortured. He was shot
in an Israeli prison.
Israeli prison. There was a guy, Jose Moreno. He's an ICE prisoner held by the U.S. ICE detainers, and he told us stories about what they do to these people in ICE. These aren't people convicted of crimes. They're just suspected of violating the ICE rules. Suspected. None of them have gone to court. Okay, they've had them guys, they went on hunger strike. They were influenced by the California thing, and they went on hunger strike. And their complaints were just as valid. I mean, they didn't have the same complaints that the California prisoners had. What I'm saying is what California is doing is kind of bleeding over into other movements, creating a greater movement. The ICE hunger strikes have gone to New York, Atlanta, Texas, and other states. It's spreading as a means to break down that overpopulation in ICE, and they're starting to turn them loose. There was a recent article Ed and I read, I think it's just, was that for, which state was that for?
Washington last night.
Yeah, it was Washington State where they decided, yeah, we're locking up too many of these people up and doing too many wrong things, and it's a great article. Like I say, I'm blown away, but I've been done 40 years in prison. I struggle. I've been in work strikes, and I've been in riots. You know, I've burned places up, and I smashed through the windows inside of prisons, you know, with the frustration. But these guys have moved, and they ain't busted the grape yet, and they got the state all shook up. They're starting to get the whole U.S. shook up. I mean, this is spreading internationally. They're understanding, you know. This is just, like he says, it's one step. These are guys who aren't working. They couldn't find any other thing to do but say, look, let's do a hunger strike. Well, you guys go along with it. The outside population is great. And some of them went on, about 100 or so did go on a work strike.
2,600.
The 2,600. But like he says, the next step has to be to build a stronger leadership in the general population, people who are working. Now, when they stop working, it's going to not only shut the prison down, but the guards are going to get paid time and a half overtime to do the jobs that the prisons are doing. So it's going to cost the state a hell of a lot more just shutting this thing down every day. Those salaries are going to go up. So it will have an effect, more effect than just saying, well, we don't have to work, we don't want to work. When money talks and bullshit walks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're going to start feeling it right then. Like I said, Ed and I are facilitating what the prisoners are doing, and we're hoping that they take that next step. Some of them are talking about it. Doing the work strike. We get a lot of letters from the language isn't that heavy, but they have another thing going. They're trying to do a PAC. Anybody know what a PAC is? A political action committee? Okay. The Republicans filed a case called Citizens United, and the Supreme Court ruled that money is free speech. So if you have $1 billion, you can give as much money away as you want because that's free speech, you know, to the politicians. They can buy elections in that way, in other words. So the prisoners have seen this and they said, well, we're not going to allow us to have a prisoners union join up with all the other prisons in California and the United States, but we can form a PAC. And they're talking really strong about this. And some prisoners feel that their communities, their families and friends will contribute to a PAC. A lot of them say they'll contribute to a PAC and have a voice. A real strong voice of who's going to be elected, who's going to represent them. But that's another idea they're having and they're moving toward. I wish they'd move just as strong toward the work strike thing, because I think that's valid. Right. And it's bleeding over into other states. Like you see, Washington, Oregon are getting interested in it. I think Texas is interested in it.
Could you just say what the, say there's four requests, demands?
The demands, actually, there were five of them.
Oh, five, okay.
They want, while they're locked up 23 hours a day in a space smaller than your bathroom, they would like the opportunity for educational materials, correspondence courses and stuff like that, the means to improve themselves. They would like access to recreational material, such as a pull-up bar and stuff like that installed in the unit. They want the state to comply with the 2006 congressional recommendation on minimum standards of solitary confinement in prison types of imprisonment. I believe one of them was about better access, you know, like photographs or visits, better access to people on the outside. But the most important demand, these people are locked up in the segregation unit for being gang members, either members or associates of some type of prison gang. And what it takes to be validated as a gang member is very little. If you have a publication in your cell that contains the name George Jackson, or if you have art in your cell of Aztec nature, that can be used to validate you as a gang member. It requires so little evidence. And as Mark said, they lock these people up for 10, 20, 30, indefinitely, 30 years inside these little cages. And so the most important thing is to have actual evidence of behavior-based evidence that would get you locked up, rather than somebody's name on a piece of paper, on a newspaper that's found in your cell, or... now, they say the only way you can get out of the SHU is to debrief, parole, or die. Mm-hmm. And debrief means that finally you've had enough. I just can't take this anymore. You go to the cops and say, okay, I'm going to debrief. And you give them the names of people who are gang members.
Or not.
Or not. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, yeah, you have to give them something. So they, you know, accurate or not, they give it. Mm-hmm. So that causes other people to be locked up. This person gets out of the SHU and goes to something called a special needs yard, which is a prison that consists of all snitches.
So... If people with jobs that get paid go on a work strike, then they might get fired. So in the prison, what is the consequence for going on a work strike?
It depends on the number of people involved. We had a work strike at, well, I've been in a number of them, but we had a work strike at McNeil Island when it was a federal prison, and everybody, almost everybody participated. I had a job. I was the tier cap, or whatever, I didn't have a title, but my job was to make sure that everybody on the tier understood that there was a strike happening. And we only had one person on our tier go to work on the day the strike was to happen. His name was Sam Bowers. He went to work and they sent him back because there weren't enough people to do there weren't enough people. So if there's enough people participating, there's nothing the state can do. They'll threaten to write you up, but to write up the entire population is just, you know. What we did do is try to nominate the organizers. Now, they emphasize on every one of these strikes that peaceful. This is a peaceful struggle. We tried to get them recognized for a Nobel Peace Prize as a propaganda value, because they give it to such pigs as Kissinger and Menachem Begin and, you know, Obama. Yeah, but the work strike is what they need, but we don't have any control over that. You know, we're not calling any shots. All we're doing is amplifying their voice.
To kind of elaborate more on the consequences of a work strike, in Georgia, prisoners went on a work stoppage, and the state responded by locking down all the prisons. So even if you weren't officially or intending to participate in the strike, you were locked in your cell. And they kept people in lockdown for, I think, a week and a half. And then there were a few people who were identified as leaders who were brutally beaten with hammers. I've seen pictures of this, and it's disturbing. In Alabama, they went on a work stoppage for 14 days last January. Again, shut down, I think, three prisons. And then they came back and they announced that they were going to go on a work stoppage so that people on the outside could organize support. And as soon as they announced the date, the leaders, the people who announced it, they announced it on video with smuggled cell phones. They were moved to the hole, and everybody else was moved around in the prison in order to prevent it from happening. So those are the kind of consequences.
Yeah, I've, like I said, 40 years behind bars, and I've been on a lot of these work strikes. And there's one thing I've learned. There's no such thing as a part work strike. The administration has to act. When somebody says work strike, that means the whole place has to be locked down. There's no way there's been a partial work strike. I've never seen one in any state and or federal or state prison. Once the work strike is started, they have to stop the whole population until they find out who those leaders are or until they can break that strike.
And what they'll also do is during the first few days of the work strike, they'll say, oh, there is no work strike. The prison is just on lockdown.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot. Tell them about the strawberry shortcake.
Oh, right. Okay, so the first California hunger strike is about to take off. It's going to be July 1st, 2011. And the day before, or maybe I think it was the first day of the hunger strike, for the first time, like I said, some of these guys have been in there for 30 years. For the first time, they're serving strawberry shortcake and all these really nice goodies in order to try and get people to go ahead and eat.
Yeah,
it didn't work. None of them buckled.
Mm. That was hard.
Real strawberries, huh?
Yeah. The newsletter is called Rock. So we communicate with the prisoners by mail. They send letters to us, and we type them up and put them in a newsletter, and then send them back in to the SHU. Most of our readers in California are SHU prisoners. And we send it back in, and they coordinate in that way. We've been engaged in this struggle since